Okay, let's dive into this. You've probably seen the images, right?
Yeah.
Flittering on your screen, a street protest, and then suddenly it just spirals into these violent clashes.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. And it's often not just about that one moment, is it? It reflects these much larger fights happening in society.
Absolutely. And today we're really going deep into one specific flashpoint, those intense confrontations in Seattle back on October 14th, 2023.
Right, Seattle. That was the day pro-transgender advocates and Christian protesters clashed pretty heavily, ended with 8 arrests, I recall.
That's the one. And our mission here for this deep dive is really to get past just the headlines. We want to unpack the incident itself, look at the, you know, the deeply held beliefs on both sides.
Understand why they were there.
Exactly. And how these things actually unfold, the dynamics of it. And then zoom out a bit to the broader implications for, well, public conversation and all the tension around it.
So the idea is to give you, our listeners, a kind of shortcut to getting properly informed on what is, let's face it, a really complex issue.
Yeah, and we're drawing insights directly from the source materials we've gathered for this.
In Seattle, I mean, that was already a pretty charged environment, wasn't it? The whole backdrop around gender identity, religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a pressure cooker.
Oh, definitely. You could almost like feel the polarization in the air before anything even happened. It really fueled the whole thing.
So let's set the scene properly. What actually happened on the ground?
Okay, so the conflict itself, it really kicked off near downtown Seattle. You know, right there under the Space Needle, ironically.
The Space Needle. Quite symbolic.
It became a very symbolic backdrop, yeah. Our sources suggest about 300 people were there in total, representing these two very different opposing viewpoints.
So on one side, supporters of transgender rights.
Mm-hmm. And on the other, counter-protesters who were there promoting Christian beliefs about gender and sexuality.
300 people. And you said the atmosphere was charged right from the get-go, each side bringing really strong convictions.
Totally. You could feel it.
So let's dig into those convictions based on our sources. Who exactly was there and what were they standing for? What were the core messages?
Okay, so first, the pro-transgender advocates. Their core message fundamentally is about advocating for the rights, the recognition, the acceptance of transgender individuals.
Right.
They're pushing for changes in like societal norms, better legal protections, wider public acceptance. A lot of their activism comes from trying to address real inequities, you mm-hmm. know, discrimination, violence, stuff transgender people face all too often.
And the visuals were important too, weren't they? The sources mentioned quite striking displays.
Very striking. It wasn't just basic signs. Lots of colorful banners, slogans like trans rights are human rights, protect trans youth, people wearing vibrant clothing, accessories. It was a real visible celebration of gender diversity almost.
Like a projection of strength and unity.
Yeah, and there were speeches too from LGBTQ plus community figures reinforcing that message of inclusivity, of equality.
Okay, so that's one side. How did that visual assertion, that message, contrast with the Christian group? What was their focus?
Well, it was a stark contrast, as you'd expect. The Christian protesters were there asserting more traditional views on gender and sexuality,
mm-hmm.
meaning for many in that group, the belief is that biological differences inherently dictate gender roles. And this obviously clashes directly with the pro-transgender perspective.
And their signs reflected that.
Mm-hmm. Signs reading things like, there's truth in Christ, protect our children. They were particularly focused on voicing opposition to gender-affirming treatment.
Those medical or social steps individuals might take.
Exactly. Steps to align their physical selves or social role with their gender identity. And speakers from their side articulated concerns about, you know, how they see evolving transgender rights impacting traditional societal norms, family values, that kind of thing.
Wow. So, yeah, really stark contrast in messages. Paints a very clear picture of that ideological fault line. Which brings us to the, I guess, the central question from our sources. How did things turn violent? It sounds like both sides intended peaceful protest initially. What happened? What were the sparks?
Well, eyewitness accounts are pretty clear. While the intent might have been peaceful expression, things got volatile very quickly. As soon as the demonstrations really got going, people from both sides started engaging verbally.
Okay, verbal exchanges, that's common.
Yeah.
But what made it escalate here?
It seems to be the nature of those exchanges. The sources talk about inflammatory rhetoric and provocative actions. It wasn't just stating beliefs. It got personal and challenging fast.
Can you give an example? What kind of provocative actions?
Well, for instance, reports say pro-transgender activists were waving banners and chanting slogans that directly, specifically challenged core Christian beliefs, not just general advocacy.
Okay, so a direct challenge.
Yes. And then, in response, the Christian demonstrators used counter-slogans, not just to state their view, but strategically trying to drown out the other side to assert their presence more aggressively.
So it became a battle for auditory space, almost.
You could say that. And that atmosphere, it just shifted incredibly rapidly. Sources point to moments where these verbal back and forths, especially these really provocative call and response chants designed to, frankly, insult the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They escalated almost instantly into physical stuff, pushing, shoving. There were even reports of people throwing objects.
Wow.
And a key factor seems to have been the counter-protesters, their strategic positioning, their aggressive sort of posturing. They weren't just there to speak. They were actively trying to dominate the physical space.
Creating flashpoints.
Exactly. Setting the stage for physical clashes. It wasn't just simmering tension. It was specific targeted provocations and this fight for physical control that really tipped it over the edge.
Okay, so things are clearly escalating.
Mm.
Physical contact, objects thrown. Law enforcement had to get involved.
Well, right. The Seattle Police Department, SPD, they deployed officers. They had crowd control gear. They were implementing strategies for, you know, containment, separation, trying to de-escalate.
Standard procedure, trying to keep everyone safe.
That was the stated priority, yes. Ensuring the safety of everyone involved. They set up secure perimeters, used verbal commands, trying to get groups to disperse.
But as we mentioned, 8 arrests were still made. Did the sources clarify why those specific arrests happened? What crossed the line from protest to arrestable offense?
The main rationale given was public safety. Sources indicate arrests happened when individuals took specific actions, things like physically obstructing officers, throwing those objects we mentioned, or actually initiating physical fights.
So actions posing a clear threat.
Exactly. This wasn't about arresting people for just shouting slogans, even provocative ones. It was about behavior that went beyond protected speech into actual physical threats or assaults.
And the charges reflected that.
Yeah. Charges ranged from disorderly conduct, which in this context likely meant behavior actively disrupting public order and safety, right up to assaulting a police officer. And the reports emphasized these arrests weren't based on which side someone was on.
Just based on the action itself.
Purely on the public safety violation, regardless of affiliation.
And SPD is looking at their response now, planning for the future.
Mm-hmm. They stated their intent to assess how effective their response was, you know, to refine strategies for handling future protests, hopefully minimizing the risk of violence next time.
Which brings us to the aftermath. How did each side react? What was their take on what happened?
Well, the pro-transgender advocates, they strongly condemned the violence. They framed it as an alarming example of intolerance directed at the LGBTQ plus community.
Understandable reaction.
Yeah, their leaders really emphasized their commitment to equality, to respect, arguing that this kind of hostility just proves why continued activism is so urgent. Many called for solidarity, but peaceful activism going forward.
And the Christian group, how did they frame it?
They expressed serious concern about what they saw as anti-Christian sentiment. They framed the clashes more as a necessary fight to uphold traditional values.
A defense of their beliefs.
Right, emphasizing their right to free speech, but without violence. They also mentioned plans for future events, aiming more towards dialogue rather than confrontation, which is interesting. Signaled they intend to keep advocating, but perhaps shift tactics.
So two very different interpretations of the same event.
Fundamentally. And this clash, really, it just threw into sharp relief those growing tensions we see everywhere around discussions of rights, freedoms, beliefs in society today. It really highlighted how polarized things have become.
Yeah, that polarization makes these Seattle events feel like more than just a local story. It resonates wider, doesn't it?
Definitely.
So let's zoom out. As you said earlier, what historical parallels do our sources draw? And how are things like media, social media, changing the game?
Well, these kinds of tensions, they definitely echo historical patterns. Tensions between LGBTQ plus rights advocacy and religiously based opposition. We've seen societal attitudes transform hugely over decades, right? Think about same-sex marriage legalization.
Big shifts.
Huge shifts. But that progress almost always comes with backlash, often manifesting in protests very similar to Seattle's, rooted in these deeply held traditional beliefs.
You can see echoes of it in things like the AIDS crisis response, maybe even going way back to Stonewall in 69.
Absolutely. Stonewall was a catalyst. And you see similar dynamics and debates around things like the Defense of Marriage Act, passionate rhetoric, public mobilization.
But what's different now? The sources on Seattle seem to highlight something new, maybe about the intensity or the amplification.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is that contemporary protests, like Seattle, often feature a more diverse coalition of voices than perhaps some earlier movements. But the massive change is digital.
Social media.
Social media and digital activism have utterly revolutionized how groups organize, how they spread their message. It allows for incredibly rapid mobilization, far wider reach for their narratives.
Yeah.
It changes the whole landscape.
And that feeds directly into media coverage, right?
Yeah.
How the story gets told. Our sources pointed out different outlets had really different takes on Seattle.
Oh, completely different narratives, often reflecting clear biases. Some outlets framed it primarily as a confrontation of rights.
Focusing on protecting marginalized groups.
Exactly. Highlighting perceived aggression against the pro-transgender side. Others framed it more as a clash of ideologies.
Centering religious freedom.
Yeah, focusing on the right to express traditional views. That divergence in how it's portrayed, it just underlines how complex these issues are and how polarized the perspectives can be.
And social media. It just throws fuel on that fire.
Absolutely. Pivotal part. Platforms like, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, they let individuals share their own takes instantly. You got this flood of opinions,
mm-hmm.
massive support pouring out for the pro-transgender demonstrators, framing their actions as this necessary stand against hate and intolerance.
And on the other side,
equally passionate support rallying behind the Christian protesters, framing their actions as, you know, a declaration of faith, standing up for traditional values.
Wow.
This split screen on social media, it absolutely contributes to that wider cultural divide we keep talking about.
It really makes you stop and think, doesn't it? How these platforms, supposedly about connection, can become such powerful engines for division.
It's a paradox we're living with.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, these Seattle protests, they're clearly much more than just a local blip.
Yeah.
They really underscore these ongoing, often painful struggles around LGBTQ plus rights. They highlight incredibly deep divisions in society, and they raise some really critical questions about where public discourse is heading on sensitive topics like this.
And the potential fallout is significant, right?
Yeah.
What do the sources suggest might happen next?
Well, a few possibilities. One is simply increased polarization, leading to maybe even more activism, more protests on both sides. Another is perhaps a reevaluation of communication strategies. How do groups get their message across effectively in such a fractured environment?
And maybe policy changes too.
Potentially, yeah. Hints about reexamining policies around public gatherings, freedom of expression, balancing those rights.
It feels like societal attitudes are still very much in flux on LGBTQ plus rights. And events like this could push things in unpredictable directions.
Absolutely. And police departments like SPD, they're going to continue to be under the microscope, aren't they? That balancing act between maintaining public order and protecting the right to protest, it's incredibly difficult. Their methods for de-escalation, for managing these clashes without infringing on rights, will definitely keep being scrutinized.
So lots to unpack. And it leaves us and you, the listener, with a pretty big question to chew on, doesn't
it? Yeah.
In a society like ours, grappling with these really profound ideological differences, what does it actually take to get beyond just tolerance? How do we find genuine mutual understanding, especially when deeply held beliefs clash so intensely right out there in our public spaces?